Finally, we come to the third part, that is the Rubrice Generales Missalis Romani, the rubrics which pertain to the Roman Missal. And again, we'll go through summarizing the main areas of these rubrics. The first chapter discusses the general norms, and among other things, breaks down the types of masses which are divided into two types, a missa in cantu and a missa lecta, a mass in song or chant, and a read mass. A mass in chant, in turn, can be divided into a solemn mass, a missa solemnis, which has sacred ministers, that is, the celebrant, the deacon, and subdeacon, or if the sacred ministers are not involved, it is called a missa cantata, a missa pontificalis, a pontifical mass, involves a mass of some solemnity celebrated by or in the presence of a bishop. Chapter 2 of a total of 11 discusses the calendar to be used in the celebration of Mass. You remember that we discussed this issue with the office. A similar issue arises with the Mass. In a church or public oratory, the celebrant, the priest, conforms to the calendar that is used by that church or public oratory. The same is true of a principal semi-public oratory. In secondary oratories, the priest can use the calendar of that oratory or his own. And in private oratories, he can use the calendar of the place or his own. There are some further discussions of diocesan and religious calendars, but we'll pass over those since they're matters of detail. Chapter 3 discusses the conventual mass. A conventual mass, or missa conventualis, is a mass that is celebrated by those who are bound by church law to choir, and the mass is celebrated in conjunction with the divine office each day. There are a detailed set of regulations, rubrical regulations, that pertain to this case, but since it is not the usual case, again, I'll pass over it as being a matter of detail. Chapter 4 discusses the Mass on Sundays and Ferias. It points out that all Sundays, whether first or second class, have a Mass that pertains specifically to that Sunday, and that some ferial days have a special Mass, for instance, the ferial days of Lent, and Ember Days. Chapter 5 discusses the Masses on feast days, which are defined as a Mass about a mystery, about a saint or a blessed, which is celebrated according to the prescript of the divine office. There is a broader sense of the use of the term that comprises a few additional types of masses. This chapter also discusses what formula of mass to use for certain feast days. It indicates that there are masses in the proper of the saints, the proprium sanctorum in the missal. Failing that, a feast day may be celebrated according to the common of saints, the communa sanctorum in the missal, if there is not a special mass for that particular saint. And finally, there are some additional saints in a separate appendix in the missal called pro aliquibus locis, that is for some places. For instance, there are some saints that are particular to the United States, and they are in that section. Chapter 6 discusses votive masses, which may be of the mysteries of the Lord, of the Blessed Virgin Mary, of the angels, of the saints, or others that can be found in the martyrology. There are some exceptions, so the chapter goes on to list specifically under each of those categories which masses can be said as votive masses. It's also pointed out that sometimes the wording of these masses has to be, some words in the prayers of some of these masses have to be changed, since the mass that's being read from would normally be read on the day on which the feast is celebrated, and therefore sometimes a word or two has to be changed to when that mass is not said on the particular feast day. The chapter goes on to discuss certain other changes that are accommodations that have to be made in the case of votive masses, since many of the votive masses are simply masses that would be set on a specific day otherwise. A subpart B goes on to discuss votive masses of the first class. Again, votive masses are divided into four classes, first, second, third, and fourth. Subpart B discusses those of the first class, and under each of these subparts it is indicated what features of the mass of that class when votive pertain. For instance, whether a Gloria is said, whether a Credo is said, how many prayers are said, and so forth. Subpart B on first class votive masses discusses a number of the types of first class votive masses: the mass of dedication of a church, the mass at a Eucharistic Congress, a votive mass in certain extraordinary celebrations. Subpart C discusses votive masses of the second class in the same way. Some of these are on the solemn benediction of a church or oratory, or the consecration of an altar, the mass of major and minor litanies, votive mass on the occasion of a 40-hour devotion or exposition of the Blessed Sacrament, votive masses on an external solemnity of a feast. Now, this category bears a little bit of explanation. What is an external solemnity? Actually, this concept goes back at least to the 19th century. It occurs that there are some first-class feasts which are not, which may fall in the week and are not holy days of obligation. Therefore, their celebration might be rather limited to a small number of people who might attend a daily mass. In that case, usually by indult of the Holy See, it is permitted for an external solemnity to be celebrated on a Sunday. And the rubrics say that by the term external solemnity of a feast is understood the celebration of the feast without office for the good of the faithful on a day on which the feast is impeded, or on a Sunday when the feast would have occurred within the week or on some other prescribed day. What this means in reality is that, let us say that the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, which is a first-class feast of a high solemnity, would normally fall during the middle of the week. But because it is a major feast on the universal calendar of the Church, an indult was granted for two Masses, a maximum of two Masses, to be said on the following Sunday. It is called a solemnity because the feasts are of a high solemnity. It is called external because the office that is said on the day on which the external solemnity is celebrated is not that of the external solemnity, but the office of the normal day. Let us say that the feast of Saints Peter and Paul falls on a Monday. The indult would allow that a maximum of two Masses be said at a parish church on the following Sunday. Now, the divine office that would be said on that Sunday would be the divine office pertaining to that Sunday, not pertaining to the feast of Saints Peter and Paul. The office of that feast would have been said on the Monday when the feast day occurred. So that is what the concept of the external solemnity is. Other examples of a second-class votive mass would be one on the coronation of the Supreme Pontiff or the anniversary of the Pope or the diocesan bishop. A votive mass for a grave public cause, a mass for the propagation of the faith, a mass on certain special occasions, a mass in sanctuaries devoted to particular devotions, or a votive mass for the spouses to give thanks on the 25th and 50th anniversary of marriage. Certain other masses fall into that second-class votive category. Subpart D discusses votive masses of the third class. Such would be a mass of Our Lord Jesus Christ on the Thursday or first Saturday of the month, the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus, the Immaculate Heart of Mary on certain days, which are particular devotional days. And finally, part E are votive masses of the fourth class. Those are the lowest class, and those are maybe said at libitum by the priest on a fourth class day. Now, this is where, with the votive masses in particular, comes the general philosophy of what the class structure means. Normally, days are assigned according to the precedence of the feast, a first, second, third, or fourth class. With votive masses, this structure becomes more specific in that, for instance, a third class votive mass, one that is defined as being a third class votive mass, can only be said on a day, a liturgical day, of the third or lower, that is the fourth class. A first class votive mass could be said on any liturgical day. A second class votive mass could be said on a liturgical day of the second, third, or fourth class. So let us take some examples. Let us say that we are talking about a first-class Sunday, a Sunday of the first class. On such a Sunday, only a votive mass of the first class could be said, not a votive mass of the second, third, or fourth class. So, for instance, since most saints' votive masses would be class three, you would never, a priest would never be able to say a votive mass for a saint on a Sunday, because a Sunday is set aside for commemoration of the Lord's Day. However, there are a few limited first-class votive masses which could then be said on a even on a Sunday. For instance, one of the classes was for a Eucharistic Congress, so a special mass for the Eucharistic Congress could be said on even a first-class Sunday. But normally, no other mass can supersede a Sunday. Whereas going down to the bottom of the list, if a day were a fourth-class day, a ferial day, a priest could say basically any votive mass, because the class of any votive mass would be either class four, as the ferial day is, or a higher class. So basically it is on the fourth class ferial days when a priest could say a votive mass to a particular for a particular angel or saint or a particular cause for which there is a mass provided in the Missal, for instance, a mass to give thanks. Chapter 7 discusses masses of the dead. Masses of the dead can be of any of the four classes. And detailed regulations are given for each of the classes of masses of the dead, as we previously did for the votive masses. Now, it is important to pay attention to the classes of the masses of the dead, since normally one would not be celebrating a mass for a Eucharistic Congress. On the other hand, a funeral mass or a mass in commemoration of a deceased person would be a much more common event. The rubrics point out that there are three masses of the dead provided in the Missal. One is called In Die Obitus Seu Dispositionis Defuncti, in the day of death or of disposition of the deceased. This Mass is used as the exequial Mass, that is the Mass, the primary Mass of the person, the primary requiem Mass of the person, or on the day of death, or after receipt of the news of death, or on the final burial of the deceased, or on the third, seventh, or 30th day. The second Mass in the Missal is inscribed in Anniversario Defunctorum, on the anniversary of the deceased, and that is used in the anniversaries, that is the year anniversaries, of deceased who are not priests. The priests on their anniversaries are entitled to have the first Mass said, that is the one inscribed in Die Obitus Seu Dispositionis Defuncti. The third Mass in the Missal is the Missa Quotidiana, the daily Requiem Mass, and that is otherwise said. Then there is some discussion of the use of the Dies Irae sequence and the absolution over the body or over the tomb. And then subpart B of chapter 7 on Masses of the Dead pertains to the first class Masses of the Dead. And they are the Mass on the day of All Souls Day, and the exequial mass, the mass, the primary mass of the person. That is the mass that is connected with the exequies of the deceased. The subpart C discusses masses of the dead of the second class, and those are the masses said on the day of death, acceptance of the news of death, or the final burial of the deceased. Then the masses, the third class masses of the dead, of the deceased, are the masses on the third, seventh, and 30th day from death or burial, the mass in anniversario, on the yearly anniversary date, masses of the dead in churches or cemetery chapels, masses of the dead within the octave of the of All Souls Day. And finally, masses of the dead of the fourth class, the so-called Misa Quotidiana, which can be celebrated on fourth class liturgical days outside the Christmas time. Now, it is worth pointing out that according to the 1960 rubrics, it is sometimes difficult to find ferial days, that is fourth class days, fourth class weekdays, on which a Mass of the Dead can be said. Of course, if it's a special Mass, say an exequial Mass or something of a higher class, that's not a problem. But if one simply wishes to say a Mass of the Dead for a deceased mother or relative or priest or whatever, it is sometimes difficult to find sufficient fourth class ferial days to do that, because depending on the calendar, there may be a few a month or none on a given month. For instance, in December, it's often difficult to find a ferial day. However, anniversary masses, being defined, as we said, as masses of the dead, it is easier to find. It is easier to say a mass on the anniversary of a deceased person, since that class, namely a third class. So, such a mass, an anniversary mass, can be said on any third class or fourth class day, and that would be the majority of days in the calendar. It is also provided that the anniversary mass does not have to be said specifically on the anniversary day, but if such a mass is impeded by other feast days in the calendar, it can be said on a day that is close to the anniversary day. So there is quite a bit of leeway or flexibility given in the case of masses on the anniversary of the death of a deceased person. Chapter 8 concerns the different parts of the Mass and is subdivided into quite a number of sections. Subpart A, on the Psalm Utica Me Deus, the confession and incensation of the altar. Subpart B, on the introit antiphon and the Kyrie eleison. Subpart C, on the hymn Gloria in Excelsis. Subpart D, on the orations. That is a particularly fruitful subpart to look at, because one of the main differences between masses is the number and type of orations or prayers that are said. However, the specific rubrics for each of the different kinds of masses are given under those specific kinds of masses. For instance, for a third class requiem mass, it will be stated how many prayers would be said. Going on, subpart D on the orations, talk about general principles, talk about orations and masses with several readings, of which there are some in the Missal, on the prayers under one conclusion, which are said at the Mass. There are certain circumstances where, for instance, the consecration of a bishop, the conferral of sacred orders, the blessing of an abbot, and so on, they're very special days where a special collect to signify the collect or oration is said to signify that special day, and that collect is said, the Latin term is sub unica conclusione, under one conclusion. That is, instead of the normal pattern where the first oration is said followed by a conclusion, the second oration is said, and then the third oration followed by a second conclusion, assuming there are three prayers. In this case, these special cases, the special prayer, for instance, on the consecration of a bishop, is said immediately after the first oration, and then the conclusion is said. So that is why these circumstances, which are rather rare, are called sub una conclusione. Other subdivisions of Part D, having to do with orations, talk about orations on the coronation day of the Pontiff, on the anniversaries of the Pope and the diocesan bishop, a section on the oration for the priest himself on the anniversary of his own priestly ordination, another section on the oration for the propagation of the faith and for the and about the oratio imperata, that is the commanded oration, the ordinary, the diocesan bishop or other ordinary, can specify that a certain prayer be said for a certain purpose, for a certain time, for instance, in a time of public calamity, and there are regulations about that, and also, finally, a section on the votive oration, or the oration at a votive mass of the fourth class. Going on, there's subpart E on the readings and the rest before the Gospel, subpart F on the Creed, subpart G on the offertory antiphon and the secret prayers, subpart H on the preface. There are several prefaces, and this section indicates which preface is said on which day. Subpart I on the canon of the Mass and other parts to the post-communion. Subpart L on the conclusion of Mass. These sections go into detail about alternatives for certain feast days and principles, when the Gloria is said, when it is not said, when the Creed is said and not said, and so forth. Chapter 9 discusses the tone of voice that is used in the Mass. In a Missa Lecta, a read Mass, there are certain things, certain parts of the Mass that are said in a clear voice, and the rest are said in the secret voice. Before the 1960 revision of the rubrics, there were actually three tones of voice used, a clear voice, a secret voice, and then there was a kind of a middle voice that was used for a few very few parts of the Mass, usually short phrases. In the 1960 revision, that middle tone has been done away with, and now everything that used to be in the middle tone is set in the clear tone, and the rest is set in the secret tone. The clear tone, the clotta vox, is to be heard by all, and the secret tone is only to be heard by the celebrant. There is some discussion of the tone of voices, the tones of voice that are used in a solemn mass and in a missa cantata. Then there is a brief list of the musical tones that are used in the missa cantata. There are two musical tones, one called the tonus solemnis, the solemn tone, and the other the tonus ferialis, and it describes when those can be used.